We are doing the Ein Yaakov, and last time we learned about Chizkiyo, who had refrained from getting married for fear of what his children would do. And then the Navi Yeshaya came and told him, that's it, it's over, you're going to die, because he didn't get married. And Chizkiyo turned to the wall in prayer, and his prayer was accepted, and God gave him many more years to his life. Before we continue, the Gemara is going to continue a discussion of Chizkiyo and his prayer and God's acceptance of his prayer. It's important to see a Zohar that's quoted by the author of the Ein Yaakov. He quotes a Zohar that is worth knowing. The Zohar says on Parshas Vayechi that Rabbi Yehuda began the parsha of the blessings of Yaakov. He began with this story that Chizkiyo turned to the wall and prayed in Hashem. And Rabbi Yehuda says, we know that a person is supposed to pray his prayer next to the wall without any chatzitza, anything separating between him and the wall. So how come everywhere else in the Torah, throughout Tanakh, anyone who prayed would pray near the wall? And yet the Navi doesn't bother telling us that they prayed near the wall. But when it comes to Chizkiyo, suddenly the Navi stresses that he prayed near the wall. So the Zohar says that the secret over here is that Chizkiyo was a bachelor. After so many years, he hadn't gotten married. And not only was he a bachelor, but he didn't have children. And then Yeshaya came and told him, because you didn't wed before, because you didn't have children, you're going to die, you won't live in the world to come. That's the whole Gemara that we saw. And Chizkiyo turned to the wall. What he was teaching us here is that in order for him to daven before Hashem, he needed first to fix the sin. Very often we turn to Hashem and say, God help me. And really, before we turn to Hashem, we should help ourselves. We should stop and say, okay, what am I doing wrong? Why is this happening to me? And after we fix ourselves, only then should we turn to Hashem and say, Hashem, help me. And Chizkiyo recognized that what he was missing was a wife. And without a wife, he couldn't have children, and he couldn't have the Shekhinah that he should have had. Why? So here the Zohar says something very interesting. He says there's a level of Shekhinah called Kir. Kir in Greek means master, Adon. And there's a level that a person can only attain this level of Kir, whatever that means, when he has a wife. Why? So here the Zohar says a very interesting line. It says, he turned to the wall, he turned to fix this that he had done wrong, that he hadn't gotten married, because the Shekhinah is with the women of the world. That's what the Zohar says. And the women of the world are under the shadow of the Shekhinah. Whoever has a woman with him, then he can have the Shekhinah with him. And whoever, like Chizkiyo, did not get married, cannot attain this level that the Shekhinah is with him. So we are accustomed to the concept that Shekhinah beinehim. The Gemara and the Bavli tells us if a man and women are together, then the Shekhinah is between them. And the Zohar says it differently. The Zohar says the Shekhinah is with the woman. And if you marry a woman, then you could have the Shekhinah with you. So now the Gemara is going to discuss what is it, Chizkiyo's prayer. We said earlier, Chizkiyo said, remember God, my righteous acts before you. And how did God answer him? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi Ben Zimra. Rabbi Yochanan quoted in the name of Rabbi Yossi Ben Zimra. He didn't hear it directly from him. Kol atoleh bizchut atzmo, whoever comes to God with a claim, in my merits, you should do this, tolino bizchut acherim. So from heaven, so to speak, they say, oh yeah? They say, we'll do it, but in someone else's merit. Bechol atoleh bizchut acherim, and whoever comes and asks God to do things in the merit of others, tolino bizchut atzmo, then they may tell him, we'll do it in your merit. Moshe tala bizchut acherim, when Moshe came in prayer, he asked God to do it in the merit of others. As the verse says, Moshe Rabbeinu said before God, please, forgive them for the sin of the Egel. Zechor l'Avraham, l'Yitzchak, u'l'Yisrael avadecha. Remember the forefathers, the patriarchs, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yisrael, your servants. So in their merits, forgive them for the egel, the golden calf. Talulo b'zchut atzmo. And God forgave them in the merit of Moshe. As the verse says, Vayomer la'ashmidem lulei Moshe b'chiro. God said to destroy the Jewish people after they sinned at the egel, if not for the fact that Moshe stood in the way. So the Navi attributes the rescue of the Jewish people to Moshe. Chizkiah tala b'zchut atzmo. Chizkiah hung his prayer on his own merits. As the verse says, Zichrona asher talachti lefanecha. God, he says, please remember how I walked before you, how I did all the things you wanted me to do. In my merit, saved the Jewish people. Talulo b'zchut acherim. So from heaven they answered him. They hung the reply to his prayer in the merits of others. As the verse says, V'ganoti aleir hazot lo'oshia lema'ani uleman David avdi. I will protect the city, I will rescue it, I will heal you for my sake, for the sake of David my servant. V'haynu Rabbi Shua ben Levi, and that's what Rabbi Shua ben Levi taught us, my dichtiv, hinei l'shalom mar limhar. Why is it that when Chizkiyoh sings a song and thanks for the fact that God cured him and saved the city, he says, behold, when I was given peace, bitter it was for me, bitter. Why does he say it was bitter twice? Afilu b'shan sheshigeo lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shalom. Even when God told him things will be in peace, maru lo, it was still bitter because God told him that it's going to be in the merits of others. So that's why he says, even when I got the news, it was bitter. Why was it bitter? God was basically telling him, you don't have enough merits to save yourself. Chizkiyoh came with the claim, God, look at all the things I did correctly. And God basically said, I'm doing it in the merits of others. Yeah. I didn't see anyone that says this, but it's interesting to see that Chizkiyoh seems to have erred a few times. Our sages say that Chizkiyoh had special secret service. They used to go around the city and check that no one was serving idols. And Chizkiyoh tried to ensure that there would be no idol worship among the Jewish people, that everyone would serve Hashem. On the positive side, he succeeded. He succeeded in setting up educational institutions so that even the youngest child knew the Torah very well. But on the sur meira, the removal of the bad, that he was not successful. Our sages say that the people of the generation who wanted to serve idols, leitzanei ador, what they do is they take a figurine of an idol and they'd divide it in two and put the two halves on the two doors. And when the secret service of Chizkiyoh would enter the room, they'd open the doors. And now, all you saw was two halves. It didn't seem like an idol. It was only when you'd close the door that you could recognize that it was an idol. And these were the ways in which the people got around his secret service and were still serving idols. Chizkiyoh thought, my generation has merits. I ensured that the people would stop worshipping idols. And in truth, our sages tell us, we see from the Navi, that he was wrong. So we see that Chizkiyoh overrated the people and overrated himself and overrated his success. He thought he had enough merits. He was wrong. He thought that the Jewish people stopped serving idols. He was wrong. He thought that Yeshayahu should come to him, and it seems like he was wrong. So it seems like as great as Chizkiyoh was, and he was much greater than we can begin to fathom, our sages still revealed to us a certain area that he erred in. Now, one of the claims that Chizkiyoh made was that there was a great woman in the city of Shunem, that the prophet Elisha would frequent their home, and she told her husband, let's make a special room for the prophet. And Chizkiyoh said, you brought her son back to life, and the merit that she made a roof or a room for the prophet, and my great-great-grandfather, he built the whole temple on your behalf. Certainly you should save me in that merit. So that was his claim. So now the Gemara is going to focus on that woman, the Shunamis. What did she do? The verse says she told her husband, Nasena aliyat kil kitana. Let us please make an elevated wall, a small elevated wall. What was she talking about? Rav Shmuel. There's a discussion between Rav and Shmuel. Chadama, one of them say, that what they did was they had a porch, some kind of attic that didn't have a roof, and they laid a roof on it in honor of Elisha. That's why it says it was Aliyah and Kir. What is the Kir? Kir ordinarily is a wall. Kir could also mean Kirua, that they laid beams on top. They made a sili. Another one says no. They had some kind of big room. And they divided it in two. That's why they made a wall. That's why it says Kir. The Gemara says, according to the one that says it was some attic, Kir has to mean that they laid beams, they lay a roof over it. According to the one who says it was a room that was divided, why does it say it was elevated? It was elevated means mulash babatim, that they said, let's make him the best home there is. So that's why it means elevated. She told her husband, and we'll place in that room for him a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. So Abaye says, and some say it was Rabbi Yitzchak, if one wants to derive benefit from others, so he should know it's permissible to do it if he does it like the prophet Elisha. That we see, when they made all this for Elisha, he agreed to take it. So, if one wants to derive benefit from others, it's permissible, provided that he does it like Elisha. What was special about Elisha? That we find by Elisha, later on, when he rescues Naaman, the Armenian general who had Tsaras, so Elisha cures him, and Naaman wants to give him a bunch of gifts, and Elisha refuses. So we see that when Elisha agreed to derive benefit from others, he only agreed to derive benefit from righteous people who really wanted to give him, like this woman, like the Shunammite. But if it was people who were unworthy, like Naaman, he did not accept anything from them. So the Gemara says, if you want to derive benefit from others, you could do it, provided you do it like Elisha, who only accepted it from righteous people who really wanted to give it. And if a person says, I don't want to derive benefit from anyone, I'm not taking gifts from anyone. So the Gemara says, he's permitted to adopt this attitude and say, I will not derive benefit from any other people, provided that he does it kishmuel ramati, like Shmuel HaRamasi, the famous prophet Shmuel, that the verse says, utshuvato ramata kisham beito, that he'd go around Israel till he got back to the Ramah, that hilltop where his home was. And Rav Yochanan says, what's the verse telling us? Shekol makom shalach sham beito imo, that wherever he traveled, he'd take his home with him. He took everything he needed. So wherever he traveled, he didn't need anything from anyone. He was going to judge the people. He wanted to ensure that no one could bribe him. So wherever he went, he took everything he needed and he never accepted anything from anyone. So the Gemara says, if you want to say, I will derive no benefit from anyone, you could do it, provided that you do it like Shmuel. Some people say, I want to have nothing to do with society. Don't give me anything, I want to have nothing to do with you. That you're not allowed to do. The only way you could do it is if you do it like Shmuel. Shmuel said, I'm not taking anything from anyone, but I'm giving everything to everyone. Shmuel didn't take anything, but he did travel all around Israel helping the Jewish people out. A person can only take one of these stances if he does it the balanced way the Torah wants him to. If he says, I'll accept benefit, then he has to do it in a way that he's only accepting from people that it's right to take from. If he says, I'm not taking anything from anyone, he could only do it so that, so long as there's no bitterness inside him. So long as, even though he's not taking anything from anyone, he's still giving to other people the way Shmuel did. Matomer Elisha, this great woman, said to her husband, Hinena yadati ki ish Elokim kadosh hu. She said, behold, I know that the man of God is holy, and let's make for him a special room. So we see that she was the one. She gave the push to help out Elisha. How come her husband didn't come to this recognition? From here we see that the woman could tell who the guests are better than the man can tell. So this is a generalization. It means that in general, the women will be able to take note of who's a refined person and who isn't better than the man can. Obviously there are exceptions to the rule. Kadoshu, she said he's a holy person. Mina yada, how did she know? Rav Shmuel, chad amar shlo rata zvuhu veral shulchano. Rav and Shmuel, one said, she saw that whenever he sat down to eat, flies would never pass over where he sat down. If he sat down to eat, the flies would never come bother him in the meal. Chad amar sadin shepishtan etzea al mitato. And one said, she lay his bed, she made his bed with a linen white, exceptionally white linen, ולא ראתה קרי עליו, and she could tell that there was never any semen on it. So she saw he's a holy person. He never emits anything. קדוש הוא, אמר רבי יוסף רבי חנינה, she stressed, he is holy. Rabbi Yosef Rebbe Chanina says she was saying, "Hu kadosh, he is holy. Umshalto eino kadosh, but his servant, his shamish, he is not holy."
Gehazi.
And that's Gehazi. So the question is, what was she saying? So there's a pasuk in Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech says, "Moshel, when you have a ruler, makshiv al devar sheker, that's listening to lies, kol misharatav reshaim." You should know, it's not only he who's listening to lies. All his servants are all wicked. If the guy on top is wicked, if he's a liar, so usually it trickles down. Everyone he hires, everyone around him, you could rest assured that they're the same type of people. So she thought, if Shlomo HaMelech is telling us that if the one on top is bad, then everyone beneath him is bad, then we can infer that if the one on top is good, then everyone beneath him is going to be good. So I know he's holy. Must be that the guy under him is also holy. Then she saw that Gehazi wasn't holy. Gehazi would talk to her. She saw that Gehazi wasn't being modest toward her. So she said, wait a second. That's not right. I know the boss. I know the prophet. He's holy. But this Gehazi, he's not holy. So she said, must be that Shlomo HaMelech only said for the bad. Shlomo HaMelech only said, if the guy on top is accepting lies, you should know everyone beneath him is wicked too. What about if the guy on top is a big tzaddik? So then maybe the people under him are tzaddik and maybe not. You can't know. That was her conclusion. So she came to her husband and said, I want you to know. He's holy. The other guy? I'm not so sure. That doesn't seem right. And the Gemara says she was right, because later on when her son passed away, and she went to the prophet and said, you promised me that the boy would not die so young, and she threw herself at the prophet's feet, it says, Vaigash Gehazi lehotfa. Gehazi walked over to push her away. And how did he push her away? Amar Rav Yosef Rav Chanina shachaza ba'od yofya. He grabbed her by her chest and pushed her away. So he was an unscrupulously immodest person. You see the way? So you see, there's a problem. So you see, she was right. Now this is an important point, because unfortunately, sometimes this happens even today. You have a big tzaddik or a big tamid chacham, and the people under him are a bunch of crooks. And this happens more than once, because sometimes people push their way up, and they make it to be the head shamish or stuff like that, and they're really not good people. There was once a businessman who was having trouble with his business, and he tried to get a meeting with one of the big rabbis of Israel. So he calls up the rabbi's office, and his secretary answers, and the secretary says, for $50,000, I'll give you 5 minutes with the rabbi. So this businessman calls me up, and he said, what's going on here? Since when do you have to pay $50,000 to see a rabbi in Israel? So I called up and I checked out what was going on, and they told me, no, if you would have gotten to the rabbi, you would have seen him for free. The secretary's a crook, and the rabbi hasn't yet gotten wind of it. We have to know that you can't judge a rabbi by a secretary. There's more than one Gehazi out there. She says to her husband, Over aleinu tamid, this man of God is always passing by us. He's passing by us tamid, always. So it seems like she's complaining. On the other hand, the whole conversation, she's saying, let's help him out. Let's set things up so it's convenient for him. So why is she stressing he's always passing by? Amar Rav Yosef Rav Chanina Mishum Rav Lezer Ben Yaakov, Kol HaMarech Tamid Chacham B'toch Beito Umhaneu Min Chasav, whoever takes in a Tamid Chacham into his home and gives him pleasure from his assets, Ma'ale Alav HaKatuv Kilu Makriv Tmidin. So the verse considers it as though he brings the sacrifice that is always brought every morning and every night. That's called the tamid. And that's what she was saying. The man of God is passing by us, and tamid, it is always, and this gives us the merits as though we are always bringing sacrifices before our Creator. And it's important to know that the mitzvah of achnasat ochim is one of those mitzvot that Chazal tell us, schara betzida, that the wages are right near it. The Medrash Tanchuma says that this mitzvah helps people have children. The Medrash quotes from different stories in Tanakh, people who are careful to do achnasat ochim, they have children. And there's a chassidut, I don't remember which chassidut, in Rehovot, that they started an organization where couples who can't have children, they get together on Shabbos, and they spend Shabbos in the hospital bringing food and taking care of the families that are stuck in the hospital for Shabbos. The patients, the hospital's taking care of. What about the families of the patients? Here in Israel, yeah, in Rehovot. So I don't remember the name of the chassidut, but I had a bris of Yisrael Dov Libo a year and a half ago. So his mohel was one of the heads of the organization, and he told me that to date, I think I've had five couples already that fertility treatment hadn't worked, and they already had children doing this mitzvah. Like the Medrash Tanhuma said, you do achnasat ochim, then you're married to have children. So, okay. We have another quote from Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina in the name of Rabbi Ben Yaakov. A person shouldn't stand in a high place and pray, but rather in a low place to pray. As the verse says, I call you God from the depths. And some kilot, the custom used to be that the bima, the place where the chazan stood, was deep down. You'd walk down a bunch of steps to a platform where the chazan used to pray. Tanya Namihachi. We have a Tanakh quote, a person shouldn't stand on a chair, on a stool, or on any place high in prayer, but rather he should stand in a low place for prayer. For there's no such thing as a person being haughty before God. As the verse says, God, I call you from the depths. And another verse says, David HaMelech says, the prayer of the poor as he is bent over in prayer. So you see that prayer is supposed to be said when a person is bent over, when he's lower. We lower ourselves before God. One of the concepts, if not the concept, of wearing a yarmulke is that I'm not lifting my head up. There's something above me. I recognize that God is on top. Another quote of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, in the name Rabbi Lez ben Yaakov. When a person stands in prayer, he has to put his two feet together. As the verse says, V'ragleihem regel yeshara. The verse describes how Yechezkel saw a heavenly vision. He saw the ant room before Hashem, and he saw the angels, and he noticed that their feet were united. They were this straight foot. So we're supposed to be like them, that our feet come down straight together. Now, what's the idea? So there are a few concepts here. One concept is that we're supposed to be like angels. We're comparing ourselves to angels, like the pasuk says, and we find that in a few aspects of prayer. Another concept is that when I'm standing with my feet together, so you could easily knock me over. If I want to stand firm, so there are different stances, but the worst stance is when my feet are together. When my feet are apart this way, I have stability in one respect, and my feet are apart front and back, so I have a different type of stability, but the worst position is when your feet are together. That's when you're most vulnerable. When we stand in Shmona Esrei, we say, God, I recognize I'm vulnerable. I put my feet together. I got nowhere to run. I got nowhere to hide. Another concept is that we're supposed to stand in Shmona Esrei with our hands together and our feet together. Now, our hands together, it doesn't say in the Gemara. That the Magen Avraham quotes from Kabbalah Sfar, in prayer, our hands are supposed to be together, if I remember correctly. But the feet together, that's our Gemara, that the feet are together.
So the
Magen Avraham brings from the Kavanos, if I'm not mistaken, in the name of the Arizal, that you're supposed to have both hands together by your heart when you daven. Most people are holding a siddul. If you're holding a siddul, so you got to hold your siddul. There's nothing you can do. So when we put our hands and feet together, we're standing before Hashem as though we're a slave that's bound before his master, and he's begging, help me out. So these are some of the concepts which we're alluding to in standing in this position when we stand in prayer. There's a deeper concept which the Rashba over here goes into. We say the feet have to be together Just like the angels, it says their feet, v'raglehem, and their feet were regel yeshara, a straight foot. Their two feet came together as though they were one straight foot. So the word regel could mean a foot, and the word regel could also mean a cause. Vayevarech Hashem otecha leragli, Lavan says. God blessed me. Yaakov says to Lavan, God blessed you because of me. Leragli, because of me. Regel could mean the cause of. So the angels, when they're standing before Hashem, the Pasuk says that their regel is regel yeshara, their cause, the things that they don't turn to the tavot, to things that attract them. The cause, the things that drive them are always the truth, the service of Hashem. So when we stand in prayer, to an extent, we're supposed to try and be like the angels, that the things that drive us are the truth. We have another quote, V'amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina M'shom Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, regarding prayer. My dichtiv, what does the verse mean? Lo tochelu al hadam. Do not eat over the blood. The verse indicates many things. We derive many, many things from this verse. One of the things we derive is Lo tochelu kodem shetitpalelu al dimechem. Do not eat before praying over your blood. Meaning one is not supposed to precede food to prayer. You wake up in the morning, first pray for your life. You finish praying, then you can go eat. And this is halacha. The halacha is that one is not supposed to eat before prayer. Unless one is a little bit ill, one is weak, one needs to eat, then one may eat. But if there isn't any unusual circumstance, one is supposed to daven and then eat. Even at the expense that one will miss minyan, let's say a person says, well, I'm going to go out on a mission, I'm out in Naza, and if I wait for the minyan, then I won't have a chance to eat after minyan, and we have to go out on the fula. So in that situation, we would say, you're right, you have to eat, you can't go out without eating, but if you have enough time to pray, if you pray now, so better pray now without a minyan and eat later than you eat before you pray with a minyan. אמר רבי יצחק, אמר רבי יוחנן, אמר רבי יוסף רב חנינא, משום רבי אליעזר בן יעקב. כל האוכל ושוטב אחר כך מתפלל, if one eats and drinks and only afterwards goes to pray, עליו הכתוב אומר, but in the verse says, ואותי השלחת אחרי גביך. God says about your oven ben avot, you threw me behind your back. אל תיקי גביך אלא גאיך. God saying, not that you threw me behind your back, but after your pride. אמר הקדוש ברוך הוא, God says about one who eats before praying, only after this one took pride, did he accept the yoke of heaven. So from here we derive that the only problem in eating before prayer is eating something that involves pride. So our sages taught us that food is something that involves pride. You sit down, you fill your stomach, that's considered taking care of your needs before praying. But drink, let's say a person wants a cup of coffee before prayer, that's not a problem. A cup of coffee, a milkshake, you want to drink something before you go to prayer, you could drink whatever you want and then go down. I don't know. You could have with sugar and with milk. It was written without sugar and without milk because 100 years ago, when you had sugar, it was considered something. You're having sugar. Today we have sugar all the time. You go into Beis Medrash, most Batei Medrash offer you sugar for free. Many Batei Medrash offer you milk for free. Once upon a time, sugar and milk were considered something special. So in those times, the Mishnah Brura writes and others write, you can drink, but don't sit there and have your drink with sugar and milk, because that's really being proud before going to prayer. But today, I think we take all that for granted, and today it's not a problem. Amar b'mani. גדול הקורא קריאת שמע בעונתה יותר מעוסק בתורה. One who reads the Shema in its set time is greater than one who's dealing in Torah at other times. This we will have to go into. Bezat Hashem, we'll go into it next time.